This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 17th of February 2016 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. For this week's television review, we're dialing up to Toronto to speak to John Doyle, TV critic for The Globe and Mail, who has the lowdown on what's on the box this month. Up for discussion today, we have the J.J. Abrams adaptation of the Stephen King time travel thriller 11-22-63, the second season of Breaking Bad prequel Better Call Saul, and Judd Apatow's latest whimsical comedy, a Netflix series called Love. That's all to come on today's edition of the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Welcome to the show, John. We'll kick things off today with J.J. Abrams' latest show, 11-22-63. Now, this is an adaptation of the Stephen King thriller in which a high school teacher, played by James Franco, is sent back in time to prevent the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. The first episode was aired earlier this week. John, what was the reaction?
Well, I think it has gotten reasonably good reaction. A lot of people know the Stephen King novel, which, you know, is one of his more than 1,000-page thumpers, doorstopper of a novel. And most people are still intrigued by the idea of conspiracy surrounding the John F. Kennedy assassination. So you've got a pretty good mixture there, a recipe for getting people's attention. The series is extremely well done. It's done for Hulu, the streaming service, and this is one of their attempts to create a footprint in major scripted drama rather than simply being a sort of library for old network shows. And it does work rather well. The thing about it is that, you know, in the context of contemporary television drama, this isn't top-notch drama of serious intent. It's not, there isn't the gravitas to it, but it's extremely well-crafted pop culture entertainment.
Well, before we go any further, let's have a short clip. This is 11-22-63.
You see, the past doesn't want to be changed.
When you're close to changing something, you feel it push back.
Last thing you can say about killing a man is that it's brave.
Mr. Amberson, this is Miss Dunhill.
She's starting off.
When rules are broken, there's a price.
Price must be paid to set things right.
CIA's pulling the trigger. What do we do now?
Then you kill Oswald.
Well, as you mentioned, John, you wouldn't describe it necessarily as top-notch drama. And, well, I mean, just listening to that clip there, it does have the sound of being perhaps an aspiring top-draw level of our television series. But the premise just feels a little bit silly. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the premise is silly, but it's still one of those intriguing twists that, you know, people will always fall for. That is time travel. What if you got to go back in the past and change things? You know, everybody's intrigued by, you know, what if you got to go back in the past and kill Hitler? And what the premise here is, what if you were able to go back to the early 1960s and stop JFK from being assassinated? The way it's sold to the character Jake, who's played by James Franco, is by the owner of a local diner who has this little closet at the back of the diner that allows you to step back into the early 1960s. The way it's sold is there's a butterfly effect. If you stop the assassination of JFK, that stops Lyndon Johnson from taking office, that stops the escalation of the Vietnam War, and that stops an entire generation from being scarred by the Vietnam War. That's, you know, that's the essential premise. In King's book, he goes, when the character goes back to the early 1960s, there was a great deal of sort of labyrinthine plotting around the various conspiracies that are still believed by some about JFK's assassination. But in the adaptation, it's much more focused on Jake going back into the past and his sort of personal journey of discovering the past. And that's probably the most serious-minded part of it, is the way in which the early 1960s is presented in the drama. Part of Stephen King's point is that we construct this picture of the past. We see it with a kind of purity that it really doesn't warrant. So when the character goes back, it's visually very sumptuous. See, the early 1960s is presented in all kinds of candy colors. The food tastes better, everything seems sweeter, but then there is a point where the crux is, if you're trying to change the past pushes back and terrible things happen.
Well, you do have to love a diner with a time machine in the closet at the back, my favourite kind, personally. But talk to us a little bit about the aspirations of Hulu. How do you see this streaming site taking off when compared to the other increasing competition from, obviously, Netflix and Amazon, too?
Well, it's a strange and wonderful time in television, because everybody wants to be into the scripted content game. Everybody wants to have the content that is going to drive subscriptions and that is going to be watched and people are willing to pay to see for many years to come. That will happen if the content, you know, gets the stamp of being a classic that you must see. Hulu is aiming for that kind of thing, but it's starting, I think, sensibly by doing a Stephen King adaptation, because Stephen King is a brand already, and the novel is well known, the premise is attractive. So it's very well done, but it's not up there with HBO drama.
That is 11/22/63, which perhaps doesn't have the catchiest name in the world, but it did debut on Hulu on Monday and is being distributed around 18 European territories by Fox. Well, next on our list now is the second season of Better Call Saul, the popular prequel to hit series Breaking Bad. Now, John, fill us in on where we left off at the end of the first series. It was out a little while ago now. What are we expecting from this next set of episodes?
Well, I think to sort of fill people in, you know, Better Call Saul is a prequel to Breaking Bad. It's about the Saul Goodman character, played by Bob Odenkirk, and it's about his journey from being a sort of a con artist teenager to being the Saul Goodman character, who is part of the core of the Breaking Bad story. It takes its sweet time in building up the character, filling in the blanks in how Jimmy McGill got to be the Saul Goodman of Breaking Bad. When we last met him, he had not become Saul Goodman yet. He was Jimmy McGill. He was a newly minted lawyer. Something that that surprised everybody, because he was really a kind of slippery con artist character before that. But he was a lawyer, and he was still trying to figure out his way into the future. And when this second season of Better Call Saul opens, he still hasn't become Saul Goodman, but is a step closer to it.
So I guess it's a little bit like the other series Gotham, about maybe following a character that we know where they're going to end up, but the fun is watching how they actually get there. The first season, of course, received much acclaim. It was showered in Emmys. What do you think will happen to the second season? Are we going to live up to that sort of expectation?
I think so, yes. I mean, I think with Better Call Saul, you were far closer to art than you are to pop entertainment. It is to the credit of AMC that they have given Vince Gilligan and his writing partners incredible scope to tell this story very slowly. It's a slow-burning drama. It's one of those dramas that stands out in a sort of television culture where people are used to binge watching and moving on to the next episode and wanting that next jolt of action, drama, a twist in the plot. That's not going to happen with Better Call Saul. It moves very slowly, but gorgeously. It sort of meditates on the American culture. It is visually, it is sumptuous. And Odenkirk is extraordinary, I think, in the role. And it's hard to think back now and remember that Bob Odenkirk was essentially known as a comic actor before Breaking Bad. And here he is and anchoring what is a deeply serious and often very poignant drama about an American innocent gone astray.
Yeah, it is interesting to think of how his character has developed, even when he was in his role in Breaking Bad. It almost seemed as though he really developed that character by accident. So it will be interesting to see how season two comes along. That is Better Call Saul, which is available worldwide now on Netflix and is showing on AMC in North America on Mondays at 2200, that is Eastern Time. The final victim on this week's TV hit list is Love, the brand new Netflix series created by comedy maestro Judd Apatow. Now in this, well, we could call it a rom-com of sorts, we follow the development of a relationship between Gus and Mickey, two 20-somethings who meet by chance in a shop.
So that'll be $235.
Dude, I don't have my wallet. Can I pay you back later?
This isn't a charity.
I'm good for it. I'll come right back.
Hey, you know what? I got this.
Okay.
And a pack of cigarettes?
A pack of smokes.
Parliaments. Hey, I have money. I can pay you back.
It's totally cool. It's on me.
Don't be a fucking hero. I'm Mickey.
I'm Gus.
Follow me.
John, we were just talking about a series that has received widespread acclaim. Things are a little bit different with this series, however. It has been criticised for what some are calling poor plot, irritating characters. What are your thoughts?
I agree with those comments. I noticed that, yes, when you played a clip from Love, it's the same scene is used in the trailers and teasers for Love by Netflix, because from the batch of episodes that I've seen, that scene might be actually be the best part of it. The characters are ill-defined. They are irritating. The entire series, I think, is you know, Judd Apatow given far too much scope to be self-indulgent. These characters, I grasp that they're not meant to be the typical rom-com characters who meet cute and then very slowly develop go from being friends to being in a relationship. But at the same time, there is, you know, I found almost nothing attractive about this series. One of the faults with it, I think, which speaks to the sort of self-indulgence of it, is that it's set in L.A., in contemporary L.A. Both characters work in some way in the entertainment industry. And it is so L.A.-specific, I suspect that's just off-putting to an audience, an audience outside of the Hollywood entertainment industry. This is a series in which people talk about living in L.A., and the use of the word, of the term Santa Monica, is a punchline. And if you don't understand the ins and outs of living in L.A., then the joke passes you by.
It sounds as though it harks a little bit back to Judd Apatow's work with Knocked Up, which of course was his hit film from some years ago now. But as you mentioned there, he has been given a lot of scope to create this series in his own vision. And I'm thinking that perhaps that wasn't the wisest idea. Perhaps he is someone that needs to be reined in a little bit more and maybe put through a bit of a mold that the traditional film studios will often force onto people. I think that that has been characteristic of some of the other decisions made by Netflix. I'm thinking back to the Christmas special, which was done by Sofia Coppola. Do you think perhaps that Netflix really needs to start reining in some of their talent and not just write a blank check for some of today's most talented and celebrated filmmakers simply for that reason?
I think they do, but I don't think it's going to happen in the short term. Netflix, you know, doesn't... It doesn't pay much attention to ratings, and I'm not sure if they pay that much attention to reviews. It's a very different kind of business model. They have a lot of money to spend, and Netflix got into the scripted drama business by pretty much going around Los Angeles with a whole bundle of money and saying, who wants some to make a show? So people are, the top people in the industry are writers, directors, producers are attracted to Netflix because there are very few restraints put on them. I think this show is an example of a talent being given too much money and too much scope, and the end result being something that it's not so much that you need to have the model of a traditional movie studio where you have all kinds of notes being given on a 90-minute script. It's more that I think with the traditional television, there is an expectation that from episode to episode, the show is steady, that and it improves, and there is an actual storytelling arc to it. With one of the drawbacks of Netflix is that they put for some of us anyways, that they put all of the episodes on at the same time, and if all of the episodes are fairly mediocre, you're going to tune out after two or three. And you know it's not going to get better.
Well, that is Love, which will hit Netflix this Friday, the 19th of February. I think I'll stick to Chelsea Handler's new program. Well, that does bring us to the end of today's show. John Doyle, thank you very much for joining us from our Toronto bureau. You have been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. The show is produced by Holly Fisher. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow for our weekly book review, this time with Christopher Frey. But for now, it is goodbye from me. Thanks for listening.